Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I am in New York, looking out on LaGuardia right now. Jay Posner, my boss, the sports editor, back in San Diego. Jay, three against the Mets to end what has so far been a disappointing road trip, though the Padres did escape Chicago with a fine win, actually. Lots to talk about out of that one. What's on your mind, Jay?
I'm looking at the forecast, Kevin. That's what I'm always looking at when I'm on the road. And all I see right now is 50% chance of rain all night long. Yeah. So I get, and I know it rained a lot yesterday, or at least last night back there. So what can you do to guarantee we get a game today? Are you on top of that so far?
I don't even think about it because the rain back here, like, it is crazy. Like, it wasn't even in the forecast in Chicago at one of the days last week, and then boom, it just unloaded the Midwest. It's crazy. But I can tell you this, I certainly hope that rain delays are the worst.
Yeah, we don't need any of those. And I'm sure you have a backup plan ready to carry our section, as you so often do during this time of year. We're all counting on you.
I'll come through for you, Jay. A lot of pressure you're putting on me. Just
always.
My gosh. Tonight, I think we got to start with this, right?
Absolutely. Chris Paddock.
Chris Paddock. We got Chris Paddock against the Mets. We got Chris Paddock against Pete Alonso. We got Fernando Tatis, Pete Alonso. I mean, like, where do we start with that?
Well, let's start with Paddock and Alonso. Why don't you refresh our memories? I remember being – the one thing I remember is I was out of town that week, and I do remember – I think it was Paddock and DeGrom, right?
It was.
In that game, and I was on Eastern time, and I actually watched the game – on my iPad up until I think Paddock left, and that was like 12:30 in the morning or something like that Eastern time. But that's how enthralling that game was, and watching Paddock. That was probably Paddock's best game. I mean, that and I guess maybe the Dodger game, just given the lineup that he faced in the rematch.
I'm still going to go with the Dodger game, but I will tell you, you are right. I mean, in terms of 7 2/3 innings, here's the stat that stands out to me. Here we are, where Chris Paddock is back. Most definitely his last two games, Dodgers, Marlins. You could argue since he came back off of his little 10-day sojourn to go throw some bullpens in the Inland Empire, that he is back to being Chris Paddock. In that game, May 6th against the Mets, where Chris Paddock was fired up to face the Mets, to face Jacob DeGrom, but more than anything to go against Pete Alonso, the Mets, you know, at this point, presumptive rookie of the year. The guy's hitting bombs all over the place. He had been rookie of the month in April, and Chris Paddock didn't like that.
That's
and that
right.
was the first we saw of Chris Paddock who getting himself jacked up over what normal people would be like, well, this is ridiculous. Why are you jacked up? But that, when I say normal, I mean, that's almost a derogatory, because what I'm talking about is Chris Paddock and a lot of special people. They get angry. Michael Jordan, you know, to this day, angry. He didn't make varsity as a freshman.
Right.
You know, come on. But here's the stat that stands out to me. Chris Paddock has thrown 16 fastballs 97 miles an hour or faster. Three of them to Pete Alonso and two others that night against the Mets.
Right.
He has thrown two pitches 98, and I will give you one guess with your life depending on it, Jay, who those two pitches were against.
I gotta go with Pete Alonso
there. So that is what you know, what Chris Paddock brought to that game, and I imagine he actually really looking forward to pitching here in New York, where he riled up the Mets and he riled up Mets fans.
Right. And Mets fans, let's face it, it doesn't take much to get them riled up. And you know, look, they've been bad for a while, and they're looking for distractions. And Alonso's been great for them. I mean, I looked up this morning. I even came in early, Kevin, just for this, so that I could look up the stats for Alonso and Tatis. You know, the biggest thing that Alonso has going for him is he's played in 98 games. He started 92. Tatis has played in 64 and started 62. So that's a difference of 30 starts that we're looking at. So all these numbers have to be under those considerations. But let's face it, at the end of the year, when people are tallying up, you know, the stats for rookie of the year, they're just going to look and see, what did you do? And if you miss 30 games or 34 games that Tatis missed, you know, you're not going to get a bonus because of that. I mean, your stats are what they are. But, you know, Tatis is pretty close. He's got better numbers, basically. Mm-hmm. Much higher batting average, 324 to 265. On base, he's got 388 to 360. Slugging percentage, where you would think Alonso would have a huge advantage, it's only 610 to 595 in favor of Alonso. So OPS, 984, 970. Tatis has the advantage. Adjusted OPS, Tatis again with the advantage, 158 to 154. War, Alonso has the edge there, but again, and that's where the game's played enters into it. It's a lot easier. It's a lot more difficult to create wins above replacement when you're on the bench. That's my analysis of that, Kevin. That's pretty good, right? Alonso, this is Baseball Reference, 3.8. Tatis is 3.3. I think if you look at fan graphs, I think it's a slight difference, but they're far and away ahead of everybody else in the major leagues in terms of war among rookies. Mike Soroka is next, I think in the high twos, mid to high twos, something like that. Weighted runs created, adjusted, if you want to go down that road, Tatis a little bit of an advantage there too, 154 to 151. So again, and the big thing that Alonso is going to be helped by, 33 homers, 75 RBIs. Tatis is 16 and 39. He bats leadoff, not going to have as many RBIs. I would say right now, if people were voting, Alonso would probably win. I think it would be hard to argue that just based on pure numbers and the fact that he's played in a lot more games. But as we know, the Padres have played, 99 games so far? So
it is.
Tonight is game 100. 63 games to go. That's a lot. A lot of time for Tatis to catch up. A lot of time for Alonso to go cool. All that stuff. Anyway, it's going to be really fascinating to watch, especially for people who really care about awards. As you know, I'm not one of them. But I do think in this case, it will be interesting. And of course, if Tatis doesn't win, it will be all because Alonso plays in New York and he has the Eastern bias going for him. We'll state that right now.
It will not hurt. That's what I think you and I will state with,
correct,
unequivocally.
Correct.
It will not hurt. But look, as I agree with everything you just said, here's one thing, and I don't think you even touched this. I wonder what you think. If these were season-ending numbers, as in the average numbers, the on-base percentage, the OPS. Is 34 games that big a deal when we're talking about the runs that Tatis creates? I mean, I would not blanch at all at anyone that voted for Tatis if the season ended like this.
No, I wouldn't either. I just think that I think Alonso's 33 home runs would probably enter into it with a lot of people, given that the other stats are all so close. Now, again, Tatis plays shortstop. I don't think his numbers are fantastic at shortstop, but they're pretty good. He's made, obviously making those errors recently has dropped him a little bit in the defensive stats. He still contributes way more defensively as a shortstop than Alonso ever will at first base. So, no, I think it's certainly closer now than it was at the All-Star break. And, look, at the way things are trending, it won't surprise me at all if Tatis ends up, being Rookie of the Year, and just having the numbers just need to be close, maybe. And he, like I said, he has a little bit of an advantage now, but if you're looking strictly at war, Alonso still has the edge, and again, that comes down to games played. I think he just had more chances, to do things.
It's a wonderful thing to win the Rookie of the Year. It's only slightly more wonderful though than making an All-Star team your rookie year.
Right.
The Dodgers at one point had like six Rookie of the Years in a row, right?
Yeah, something like that.
How many can you name? Piazza, Karros, Hollinsworth, Nomo.
Was Sachs in there, or was that a different?
No, this was
later.
Further later.
Sachs and Fernando.
I covered them one of these years. So
Sachs
I know
and Fernando
that
were in one early on.
But I'm talking like in the 90s here.
Right.
Todd Hollinsworth and Billy Ashley, I believe, were like the others. And you say, unless you followed the Dodgers, who?
Right.
So anyway,
look,
Mike Piazza
is
the one in the Hall of Fame.
Right. And the bottom line is, like, I texted you yesterday. We were talking about Tatis, and I just said the bottom line is we get to watch this guy every single day, and I think that's what, from the fans' standpoint, that's what is most important, is that every day right now when the Padres play, you get to watch Fernando Tatis Jr., and that's way more important than whether somebody wins Rookie of the Year or finishes second in the voting, is that you know that you have Tatis on your team now and for the next however many years that, you know, that he's here.
I would think you'll agree with this, Jay. We can close out the Tatis discussion for this week because there will be more. I sometimes get a little deep in the weeds. I get a little geeky about some things. But when I do it about Tatis, as I did in a story that was in today's paper and is online, it's justified because it shows you more like, wow, this is why this guy's good. Wow, look at what he's doing. Now, I even got a little too geeky in that story. You took out a portion, which was too geeky. But my point is, like, there's so much about this guy. Like, he keeps on, he's the gift that keeps on giving. And the way he does it is, like, it's about so much more than his rookie year. Like, he's just going to keep going and going, you know, barring injury. He's shown that already. He's a special, special player.
Right. I mean, the only thing, and you mentioned this in the story, that's a little bit, you would expect this to level off a little bit, is the his batting average on balls in play is an absurd 421. I just don't think that's sustainable.
What if it's 400, though?
I know. And it's, you know, I think it's the highest among anybody, certainly anybody that's played as much as
well,
he
Brian
has.
Reynolds is at 422, all right? And then no one with 100 and more than 155 plate appearances, which isn't that much.
Right.
No one else above 400.
Right. For a comparison, Pete Alonso's at 278. I checked that today. The league average is usually right around 300 for that. So anyway, we should probably move on. What do you want to cover that happened at Wrigley Field? Basically one-run games. The Padres broke open the
right.
Sunday game in the ninth inning. But three very tight games that the Padres played against a very good team. On the road, lost two of them Friday and Saturday by the same score. Couldn't get a clutch hit. I mean, they scored five runs in both those games, but hitting with runners in scoring position was a problem. Joey Lucchesi was a problem. What else did you see out of... and I want to say Sunday was very impressive.
Oh, extremely.
Adrian Morejon starting 2 1/3. Cal Quantrill was fantastic for the second straight Sunday, and you know, and Kirby Yates, you know, closing it out, Tatis with three RBIs. But what do you take out of the weekend in Chicago?
Well, let's start with Quantrill, as you mentioned, and I want to do something on him here before his next either start or when he follows the opener, probably on Saturday. Here's a guy who was their first round pick in 2016. His stuff is not fantastic. It struck me, Andy Green must have used the word bulldog like three times after the game, and it's like, That is who he is. He's the bulldog. Cal Quantrill's just kind of a Canadian badass. That's what he is.
Right. And let's admit, first of all, that nickname was taken 30 years ago.
Yes.
And Quantrill has a ways to go to get to Oral Hershiser
status.
But he could be the Canadian bulldog.
Right. Whatever the word for, you know, bulldog isn't Canadian.
Okay.
what I'm saying is, like, this guy's really not that impressive, but he's kind of got a little grudge, and he kind of knows that, like, Lauer and Lucchesi were here before him, and that he started out by allowing, you know, 47 runs in the first inning of his first couple
right.
games, and you know what? He changed his repertoire a little bit, and, I mean, I don't know, just highly impressive that that he's a pitcher.
And I love his quote in the story. As I pointed out to you and on Twitter as well, when he said pitching, I'm paraphrasing after this, he said pitching is pitching, but he basically said, it doesn't matter when I go in the game, the job is the same. You know, if you give up runs, you're going to lose. If you don't give up runs, you're not. And I just thought that was so perfect because you hear so much talk sometimes from players and especially from, it seems like fans maybe more than players, about, you know, this guy doesn't have he's not in his role, and how could you use this guy in a different role, and you got to use this guy here because he can't pitch here. To me, it's always been what Cal Quantrill said. You know, look, I'm going to call on you at any point, and you need to be ready. And sure, it's different for a starter and maybe a little bit for a closer. But for the guys like Cal Quantrill, and a lot of pitchers can learn from this, they should be ready when they're called on. And, you know, I'm sure Andy Green, he knew at the start of that game what was going to happen, that he was going to come in at a certain moment. But he didn't know. He might have come in the second inning. I'm assuming
yep.
if Morejon ran into trouble, he would have had to come in maybe even in the first inning. Who knows?
We didn't even know.
Cal Quantrill was ready when he was called upon, and that's a lesson, I think, for a lot of people to learn, is when you get called upon, be ready. and Cal Quantrill was ready, and he was impressive. And because of that, he's going to get rolled out there, you know, several more times, I'm sure.
He was told on Saturday night that he was not starting. All right, so that's a fact. The other thing is he's warming up before the third. Morihone bats. Morihone goes in. Cal Quantrill inherited a runner, too.
Right,
so,
right.
Like, he didn't just say it. He, like, did it. And, that's why I started with him. Shoddy defense. I'm going to tell you something. It was brutal, those two games. Like, the Heat on Friday and Saturday, and I mean, look, the Cubs had to play in it too. The Cubs had some, you know, rough plays as well, but the heat and the wind there, it was ugly. Like you said, they lost 2 games, 6-5. We'd be looking at this road trip differently if they would have, not given away the one game in Miami there at the end. They got crushed in the first game. I don't know, Jay. they didn't play. They haven't played very well on this trip until Sunday.
Right, right.
They are
what they are. I mean, they're a team that has a run differential that's among the worst in the league at minus 45. They probably had a little better record for a while than they really deserved. You know, they're 13th in runs scored, they're 10th in ERA. You look at that and you think, well, they're 47-52. That sounds about right. You know, you look at it and say, well, they lost to the Marlins and they've lost to the Pirates and such, but that kind of thing happens. They swept the Dodgers. They swept the Brewers. I mean, you could go back at the end of the year and look at that stuff until you drive yourself crazy. But I think that, you know, at this point, you'd like to see them play a little better. And Sunday they did. So we'll see what happens now. Had a day off. Go against a Mets team that is nothing special. Actually, worse record than the Padres at 45-54. Better run differential, though, at minus 29. And they have been good at home. They're 23-19. At City Field.
They do roll out this kid. It's Jason Vargas, right?
Jason Vargas, longtime pitcher. Okay. Actually, I think went to Long Beach State, so Southern California
guy. So lefty tonight. And then two of the tougher righties you're going to face in the next 2 days. Noah Syndergaard, who I believe is the Padres' top target in terms of, so they'll be seeing him up close. Or maybe he'll start for them tomorrow. I don't know. They're going to see Noah Syndergaard up close, and then you're going to see Jacob DeGrom. Let's see. They lost the game that Syndergaard started. Is that correct? They beat DeGrom because that was the Paddock game.
Yeah, that sounds correct.
So, and they beat DeGrom here, I think they lost the game to DeGrom here last year in July, but they actually hit him around. But anyway, the Mets, by the way, anybody who says that the media is complicit in the Padres not being very good more years than not, right?
Right, right.
Take a look at the Mets, all right?
I know.
Because
yeah.
They are all over the Mets, the media, year after year after year. Yes, the Mets have been to the World Series more times. They, have actually won a World Series, but they stink. Anyway.
And the Mets, I will say this, we talk about the Padres had a tough weekend, losing a couple of 6-5 games. The Mets went into San Francisco.
Oh,
they had just won 4 in a row, including 2 in Minnesota, against a very good Twins team. The first game goes 16 innings, and they lose. They lost 3 out of the 4 games in San Francisco, all of them in extra innings, which means they got walked off in all 3 games, 16, 10, and 12 innings. So they played all these extra innings and got nothing for it. I think they won the Saturday game like 11-4 or something like that. They had a bit of a rough weekend and then obviously a long flight home on Sunday night, but they were off. Alonzo, Jeff McNeil has been outstanding mm-hmm. this year. The guy who says he hates analytics, he likes batting average, he hates analytics, which is funny because he has a 398 on base and a 506 slugging, and he's got 3.5 war, so he should like analytics because it makes him look really, really good.
So you get paid, Jeff.
Yeah, right. So their pitching has been not good outside of, even Syndergaard hasn't been great, although he's been better lately.
Much better lately.
DeGrom is not as fantastic as he was last year, but, how many pitchers in history have been that good? He's still got an ERA at 3. His war is almost 4, which is really good for a starting pitcher. Their bullpen has been terrible. Edwin Diaz, was their big acquisition. His ERA is almost 5. It's amazing. He's only blown 4 saves, but he must have had a lot of tie games that he entered that he lost, because I think he's 1-6, something like that. So, again, two teams that aren't, we're not going to see these teams in October, but that doesn't mean that the games won't have many things to watch in them, starting with, obviously, you know, Paddock and Alonso and Tatis and, you know, Syndergaard. Is he going to be traded? That most people think he won't be, but hey, the Padres can keep trying. They can try for Trevor Bauer. They can, I don't know, who else should they try for, Kevin?
Well, I really think that Syndergaard is the top target because of what he can do, what he's controlled for the next 2 years. Now, there have been, from my understanding, conversations like. There's conversations, my goodness. There's conversations with like every team, basically. Trevor Bauer is for real. And the thing is that they line up well with what the Indians are looking for, including outfielders. And by the way, if there is one that is going to go, I don't think it's Hunter Renfro. When I talk about Hunter Renfro being my favorite story, I mean, it's just amazing. First of all, last year what he did, and then this year they love Franmil Reyes. And Hunter Renfro's made himself like he's not expendable. The Padres are going to keep Hunter Renfro.
Yeah, it's funny because a couple months ago when we first started covering this and writing about trades, Renfro was the one who looked most likely. But he has definitely been the more impressive player couple of months.
He's the guy who other teams have talked about more
is really
the main thing. And, well, there's a reason, and he's showing it. But I think he's just made himself more and more where the Padres just, no, this is going to be our guy. And that's defensively to go along with the power. And, it's not great, but the increased, getting on base. Trevor Bauer is only controllable for one more year. And, look, this is not me talking. I would love to cover Trevor Bauer. Just to be clear, there's every team out there going, this guy's kind of weird. So, do we really need that, in our clubhouse in a lot of ways? I would love for them to cover, or I'd love to cover Trevor Bauer. Selfishly, I hope they trade for him.
The Indians were a win away from winning a World Series with Trevor Bauer, so I'm not sure that he could be that bad.
Nope, absolutely.
As far as poisonous in a clubhouse. And let's face it, we heard the same kind of stuff from people about Machado, and at least from my standpoint, it doesn't seem like we've seen any of that. You're closer to it
absolutely
than I am, but it sounds like the rest of the team loves Machado and what he brings.
And I think they're different things too. Bauer's just kind of a rebel. So I'm not, I didn't say it precluded them from getting him. I just think there's a lot in favor of them getting Syndergaard. And once again, to be clear, the trade deadline is not necessarily even what the Padres are looking at. I think a trade deadline trade would be something where, hey, now's the time. We got to jump on it. This is the right deal. The Padres anticipate that during this offseason, with their 40-man roster crunch, with a lot of the players they have, and a guy I'm fascinated by is Ty France. He's not going to be on the Padres. Just not going to happen. But
right. Man,
there's got to be somebody out there who can use Ty France.
Yeah, you would think so. The way he's the way he continues to hit.
And the way I bring him up, because the Padres have a lot of players to package. To be able to possibly get a Noah Syndergaard to, someone of that caliber, which they are very interested in doing. And think about that with all they have coming if they were to bring in like a guy who's like a legit like number two starter, something like that. Anyway, that's what we're looking at. Here I go to try to stop the rain, Jay.
All right. Do your best, Kevin. And then we will have you back here on Friday. The incredibly hot Giants are here for the weekend, their last visit of the year, and we will have more on that coming up on Friday. So thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.